Today is May 25th, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Charlotte Ames, longtime Alaskan whose parents came north during the Klondike Gold Rush. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in Mrs. Ames' home in downtown Fairbanks. Like many of your contemporaries, your family history in Alaska goes back to the gold rushes around the turn of the century. And growing up in Fairbanks, you probably remember much about early Fairbanks that most of us only know through history books. The story of Fairbanks really begins with your parents' generation. Do you recall hearing about your father's adventures in the Klondike? What do you remember, things that he might have told you about while you were growing up?
Well, I don't think that he told us so much about that. He was, because by the time he got up there, most of the gold was all, being taken up. But my, prior to his going to Dawson, my father was in California, and he had learned the trade of Cooper. And a lot of people think that's fixing up shoes, but it isn't. It is assembling the barrels and such as that for even not just for beer and, wine and stuff, but they would make big tanks over the railways when they had to pull the water down here,
For the steam train.
Yes, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway, that's what brought him up here. But I was... Can I give out the best one I'm going to be given out now today?
Sure.
Well, anyway, it was when the way my father got to America, he was born in Gerstingen, Germany, and he was 14 years old, and things were pretty tough in his little place. And so he had an uncle in the United States, and of course they had to come by through the regular ways in those days. He took care of two, now he was 14 years old, and he was traveling by himself, more or less, but two younger little kids, two boys that were coming over to be met by their father there, and incidentally would take care of my father as well, because he was only 14. So then they got there all right, and I have perfect thing here that I'm going to read to you.
Now that's a letter that he wrote in German to his parents, and
yes,
then you had it translated.
Yes, and Adolf Stock, he's German,
uh-huh.
Adolf and Mary. And
by the way, what was your father's name?
Wehner, Wehner.
And his first name?
Adolf, yeah. So this is the copy for that Adolf, I was thinking of Stock, Adolf Stock, his name is
Adolf Stock
too. Yeah. I guess I'm getting pretty old. Anyway, this is the letter that my dad wrote back to his mother, and he said, it's written here, and says, "Dear parents, with our Lord's guidance, I arrived in Chicago well and healthy, and could be expected after my apparent dangerous trip across the Atlantic when I had little hopes for my life. Did not intend to worry you by not writing for such a long time, so please forgive me. As he boarded the steamer, the first few days were nice. The weather was beautiful. The public in general seemed gay, and we all had a good time." Now, this is coming from a 14-year-old
boy. And
this
is in 1884.
1884, oh. July the 2nd. "Then came the second day after Trinity, and all hell seemed to break loose. We had such stormy weather. The boat went up and down and tossed from side to side, which lasted several days, and during all that tossing, the ship hit a rock and broke a blade off the propeller. 4 days before we landed in New York, I injured both of my knees. After 15 and a half days on the ocean, we considered ourselves lucky to arrive in New York. The city itself did not appeal to me. We left New York by train for Chicago, and before we got to Buffalo, we experienced a collision at a railroad crossing. The impact broke the engine of the other train in two, which caused a delay of 3 hours before we got to Chicago. We got work right away at Mr. Geis, but did not intend to stay with him because the pay was very little, 28 mark every 14 days. At first, I did not get homesick, but I do a lot now. Dear Dad, I earn more money than you do. Therefore, I would not want my parents to come to America because I think you will both be happier at home, and I will gladly send you the money that I can spare unless your living conditions should make you want to come. Father, write to me soon and give regards to Wernes and Schultz. Now that's evidently some of his friends. Mm-hmm. Greetings and best wishes from your loving son, Adolf Wehner. Also, greeting to all our next of kin, my school chums and girls. Greeting to Schluss Fritz. I don't think that should have been turned around. His father and mother and Verbers. Dear Mom, I beg of you to forgive all the worries and troubles I have caused you. And please don't cry over me, because to me, so I can see your handwriting. Fritz, I hope you do well in school, and I will then send you something. My address is Adolf Wehner, in care of G. Wassner, 321 West Chicago Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, USA.
That's quite a letter.
That was quite a letter.
And quite an adventure getting over here. So he came across country, then to California.
That, of course, he had some growing up to do before he could get over there and be up here, you know, in time to go to...
Yeah, that was, well, a good 14 years before. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Spent a number of years.
Well, from then he came up and he arrived in Dawson, I guess, in 98, yes. Mm-hmm. And then now that's the way my father got there. Then my mother, that was another problem. Her mother, the one that...
Oh, this picture of the cabin with...
Yeah, I you could get some copies off of that if you wanted it.
Yeah, so describe it. It looks like a log cabin, and she has a dog sled.
Yes, one dog hitched to the sled. But she, in order to get my mom to come along with her, she had to make Grandma, say that she would only go for 1 year, no more, nothing like that.
So your grandmother opened a laundry business.
Yeah, and she said, that's what Grandma said, or my mother said to her mother. I said, she says, well, what are you going to go do when you go up there? And Grandma said, I'm going to open a hand laundry. Those miners up there are going to need somebody to wash their clothes, and I'm going to be the one to do it. And so, by golly, she got that and it, neat and clean, and she even delivered it.
Yeah, it looks
that's
like
when she was in Dawson.
Sort of an Irish setter dog and a sleigh piled with about seven or eight packages,
bundles
of laundry.
So that's what happened, and they stayed there then for the... Oh, they were there, I guess, about several years.
In Dawson.
Yeah, but in the meantime, my mother married another man, and not another, the first. And anyway, it was, that was not successful, but she has, my two older sisters, her half-sisters, Irene and Lil, and I think almost our friends in Fairbanks know who I'm talking to. My oldest sister is in a rest home, and she is 91, and the rest of my sisters are not here above. And so that's the way they got there. But later on, the grandma got itchy feet, I guess, and she wanted to come down to Fairbanks because the gold rush was kind of, you know, leveling off. And so they came down, and Irene and Lil, mother divorced this man. And anyway, then they came down here to Fairbanks. And I don't know how I could tell you about this. There was an organization called, It was just a meeting place where you could go and dance, and I guess, you know, drink a little beer and some of that kind of stuff. And that was in a hall down on 3rd Avenue, I believe, above Lacey Street, up in that block there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my mother met my dad in that place because he was a good dancer and so forth. And anyway, it went on for quite a while, and then I don't know why it disbanded, but when it did, they had a piano in there, great big heavy Kimball, big Kimball piano. And we couldn't go to their parties, you know, of course, just the parents. And so I don't know how that disbanded, because I was just a little practically kid, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. really it was. And so anyhow, this goes into my music, some of it. Of course, I always thought I was going to play the piano. But anyway, we got I don't know why it was disbanding. It probably somebody got into a fight, I don't know. But anyway, they had this big Kimball, and they didn't know what to do with it. Nobody wanted to buy it, and a lot of them didn't know how to play it, mm-hmm. and so forth. And so they finally decided that they would take Mr. Weiner, you know, he then had been with Mom. I mean, he probably met her at that dance, you know, but that, anyway, they went, got married, and, I don't know what made it the organization to fail.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like an Eagles Hall, but it wasn't that.
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. so. And I think it was mostly just to be there and dance and mm-hmm. really enjoy yourself. And I don't even know if they drank beer, but they probably did if they were German. Anyway, Dad liked that. But anyway, they decided they were, what are you going to do with the big piano? You know, they thought that it wouldn't work at all. Nobody'd buy an old piano. So the organization got together with their officers, and they said, well, Weiner was a good member, and he was down here and helped us a lot. He said, he's got 4 daughters. Why don't we just let them have that piano so they, you know, for what he had done for the lodge. And that's what happened. This piano was in a cabin about like that. That's mm-hmm. you know, it was just the 3 little.
And so this is the piano that came from Dawson originally.
I don't think so. I don't know. There's mm-hmm. been stories going on around about that. You know, no. Anyway, it was no. That was. It may. I don't really know. See, when they came up here, it wasn't until about. When my mother got married, and we kids, I know some of these things you might ask me about that I should be able to tell you. I couldn't, because I wouldn't have been old enough to tell you.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. so that's kind of leaves a
So that was void. The piano that you got started on.
Yes, and Mr. Gobracht. Now, this Mr. Gobracht, he was a music teacher, and he's the one that taught me a few... now here was Mr. Gorbracht, here was the band. There's very few of these names that you can't name.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I think, about 3 or 4. But my dad plays a trumpet and a cornet, and then these other fellows. But he directed the whole thing. And this man was a big lanky fellow, and his name was Dan Bandman, and he was a good piano player. Too. And so then there's one of the Nordale boys here. They're all listed here.
It says it's taken around 1912.
Yeah, I imagine it was.
Yeah, well, Fairbanks City Band has started up again.
Yeah, with some of the same people. Anyway, they closed down the deal and they came, the organization, and then they came down and told my mom, and of course mother and dad, it had Irene and Lil were from the first marriage, and Louise and I were from this marriage. And so anyway, I just kind of get a
So now that you had the piano in the household, were you all anxious to play it, or was there one in particular that
Louise thought she would too, but the two older sisters were out and away. So the one of them worked for a little maiden and nursemaid, you know, for one of the jewelers in town. But anyway, it was to get a big Kimball piano into that little three-room log cabin, and that's the one that's right here someplace. And there it would be. That would be the cabin part.
So there. By three room, it'd be one room and then followed by another
Room.
Railroad car fashion.
And so anyway, that front living room, which had a big folding bed that went into the wall. Did you ever see any of those?
Oh, a Murphy bed.
Yeah, Murphy bed. It was a big one anyway. And then we had to take out something else. But anyhow, I was happy to have the piano in there. And Mr. Gobrock was going to give Louise, my older sister, the lessons because she, you know, thought would, I guess, be a better musician than I would. Anyway, I was playing along there, and Mr. Gobrock said, Carly, instead of Charlotte, he says, Carly, you play that again. He said, you made a mistake on that. And I said, I didn't know where in the world I was in the music, because I had an ear for music and I could just learn them, you know, but you don't learn them right. Anyway, I did that, played it the same way, the same time, because I was coming behind Louise's lessons, you know. And so I said, he says, well, why can't you read those notes? And I said, I hear Louise practice it. And I was going that with my, you know, it was. I was playing by ear.
So if she made a mistake, you copied it.
No, I don't think she did. I think, you know, that was one time I did make a mistake. So anyway, but I did finally learn to play enough so that I started in playing for the crowd here in Fairbanks. You know, there was I got some of the here's your one band.
Yeah, the picture. See,
yeah,
hits.
And we went down to Anchorage and played for rendezvous down there. You know, in February. This was a long
time. Oh, the Fur Rendezvous. Yeah. It says 1950 or 51.
Yeah, they
folk had dance festival in Anchorage.
Yeah, and then Verda Siebenthaler, you wouldn't know her here, I don't think. You weren't here where she was. But there's a whole bunch of stuff about our music. And so, but there was the director, and that was me.
Wasn't he from Germany?
Yes.
And had quite a musical background.
Oh, yes. Well, he was. Mr. Gobrock was a well-trained musician.
And so that was his job in Fairbanks.
Yeah, I think so, pretty much. I don't know, because he had a little cabin that was up this way a little bit towards, we got so many big houses in here now.
Somewhere in this general neighborhood then.
But anyhow, that was, I was real happy about that. And because Mr. Gobrock said to me this one day, he said, Carly, they'll call me Carly, he said, would you like to take lessons? I said, oh, yes. And boy, I got up. I took the lessons and Louise dropped out. She could have done it, though. She had music in her, too.
And about how old were you when you started lessons?
Well, that was about, it was about seven or maybe or eight.
So you really got an early start.
Yeah.
In music.
But when I found out I could just listen to them when I'm they're playing a record or something, there wasn't any point in reading any music. And anyway, I had a lot of fun during my career. It was great. And so I wanted to let you know about that and what happened to the piano. And I don't know now what happened to the piano, but Mrs. Who's that other lady that's trying to you know, get the some.
Did he have you give recitals after a while?
No, I never had a recital. I mean, no, I didn't go that route because I wasn't such a fancy piano player, but I had good rhythm. And I played a lot all the time. I started playing in Fairbanks here at different things about when I was 19. And from there on, the biggest group we played with was down here in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Furon Review.
Yeah. And this was the gal with the accordion was a Verda Siebenthaler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyway, it was...
So you played mostly with bands, accompanist type of piano player.
Well, I had played at little gatherings, you know, just the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And then Verda and I, with Fairbanks Folk Dance Club, was organized here in Fairbanks, and they were a great group, and they still do the folk dances, but it's not the same group. And of course, I played at all of that with Verda too, for all of them. And there's some little nice things said about the folk dance. The festivals and stuff, but yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, it was just great fun. I was sit up there at the piano, and I didn't have to hardly look at the keyboard and just look out over there and watch people dance.
What other kinds of events did you play for? Weddings, for instance, did you?
Yes, I have played and funerals. Yeah, funerals and weddings too. Not too many because I had too much of a bounce to my music. Anyway, it was. I don't know what I'd have done if I didn't have that music because it was
really a source of a lot of pleasure.
Yes,
then.
It was. And of course, you missed out on the dancing, if you had to play in the band. But that was it. But these here, say the Fairbanks Folk Dancers, will hold their first interior Alaska Folk Festival in the high school during the winter carnival. And we did that. And then we had they went into the square dancing a lot, and mm-hmm. they had a caller here, Ken Wade. So
what year would that have been?
Oh, my goodness, I never think of leaving things on there.
Yeah, probably in the 20s or 30s, somewhere around. 30s, maybe.
Oh, yes, yeah, it would be the 30s. It says Fairbanks musicians Charlotte Ames and Verda Siebenthaler, famed throughout territory for their folk dance music, have donated their services for the festival, and it is possible that Morgan Pop Mates of Kodiak, famous hoedown fiddler, and some Anchorage folk dance musicians will be able to make the trip here to participate. And they did. They came from Kodiak. There was
so that would have been the winter festival?
Yes. They were in February. That's when the dog races, you know, mm-hmm. and they have them on down there now. And so that's that, if you got enough of it.
Oh, I'm looking at some more of these early pictures. This is one of you. It's first grade,
first
1919.
Grade.
Now, that would have been
six.
The school on the one that burned. In
yes. But now here, this that they
and that's a picture of the whole school.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But that one is
1917. It was called
Fairbanks Public
School.
Mm-hmm. But and there's people here that, but I'm not. As I said, there are these two girls here together.
Those are your sisters.
My older sisters, and Irene is the one that's 92 years old, and then this is the I. So I see some of the gals here. There was Helen, what's her last name?
Helen Dale. Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
A few people I know.
Mm-hmm. And that was the old Maine, and we thought that was a beautiful school. And it was, but it burned. It really needed it burned out during Christmas season. Now there's that.
Holidays are always a special time, especially for children. Mm-hmm. Do you remember some pretty nice holiday celebrations when you were young?
Well, it wasn't anything that was too, it was hard times. Sometimes in the winter, there wasn't any work for the men here, and I can recall my dad going out shooting rabbits and stuff and that sort of thing. And from the looks of that little three-room log cabin that we had there, you can tell we weren't flourished at all. Yeah. But the spirit was there. You know, we'd always have some music and stuff like that. But I wish we could go halfway back to those days now and stay that way.
Take the commercialism out of Christmas and yes. The other holidays.
Now, this business here, this group of curlers, the lady curlers, those are all, got them all written down in the back, but then, could you pick me out of there?
Oh, let's see.
I enjoyed it a lot. In fact, if you go down to the curling club, they have some of the pictures hanging there.
From the early days.
Of the, and the winning teams. And I am on, I think, two or three. I never did skip a rink, but I was in third position. And I really enjoyed it, but then other things came in. And
well, curling was, early on, a very important
sport. And it's very nice down there in the curling
Now, was this the old curling rink that was on 2nd Avenue?
Yes. It was before they got that down there. I don't like their big long brooms. We used to have to kind of little shorter ones, and mm-hmm. I never did curl much with those big
These
ones.
These look like regular house brooms.
Well, I got one out here.
I thought it was a special kind of broom, but these
look they are built specially. And then another thing they did is they had, when I curled, we'd wear galoshes and then put some glue some. Ribbing on our boots or something mm-hmm. so that you wouldn't fall down. Now I went down and watched there about 4 or 5 years ago. I went down and watched the curling, and I got such a kick out of it. They had that great big broom, and then they also had they had one shoe that was smooth, mm-hmm. Boot or whatever they're wearing.
So it's a special kind of shoe then.
Yeah, because that then they could scoot along, with the one that's got the ribbing on it and mm-hmm. all that. And I had enjoyed it, but they put me in the cemetery right away if I had to go down and curl. And I know we curled it or played at their dances too. And
I see you were written up. That must have been the Heartland, December 21st, 1986. Candles on the tree, giving gifts, goodies. Do you tell a little bit about that article?
Well, the little bit about it. Let's see. What was this? No, this is a resume of who I am and what mm-hmm. I had done. And so, anyway, to begin with, there was no street here. This is part of it. Actually, to begin with for the Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. and when we were little kids. There was no street or outdoor decorations put up. The city didn't put anything like that at all. The merchants' windows were always very nicely decorated, with the Christmas decor. In school, there was no Christmas trees permitted in the schoolrooms, but the children made all kinds of things like bells and Santas. Some of them were crayoned, and some of them cut out of the composition paper, and they could decorate their rooms with that. Of course, carols were practiced 6 weeks or more before Christmas, and the children really went out great for that. When people wanted to order things, the merchants here had to start their Christmas order early. That would order the merchandise that the things they wanted, and the families would order the presents they were going to give for Christmas. They had to be ordered about 3 months before Christmas to be sure you'd get them by that time. We had a Sears and Roebuck catalog that was really our Bible. In my own family, the custom was to have our gifts on Christmas Eve, and of course, Santa Claus was very much believed in by all of us. So Mother would have an early Christmas dinner on Christmas Eve, and my sister Louise, who was 2 years older than I, and my brother, we'd have our dinner, and then we had to go to bed early. We were told that Santa Claus would not come unless we got to sleep. Now, that's pretty hard when you're a kid and you're looking forward to all of this. We'd go to bed, and somehow, by a miracle, we got to sleep. So then, in the meantime, Dad would have gone out and got a Christmas tree. Well, actually, he had got the tree prior to the deal, you know, but to bring it in the house. We went to bed, and the Christmas tree miraculously put up and gifts all under the tree, and my mother would wake us up and say, Santa's been here. Well, you ought to hear the get bedlam. There was seven of us. There was five kids and my mother and dad in this little three-room cabin. Anyway, we got up, and there would probably be no less than five other people would come and join us on Christmas Eve. Is this going to be a little too long?
No, it's all right. Fine.
Most of them were for miners from the creeks, and also a very dear German lady. Actually, she was a midwife, and she had delivered my brother in that little cabin over there. The old-timers, they loved kids because working out there didn't see them very often, and we would get a box of chocolates about like so high and about that high. I think it seemed awfully big to me in those days, so I was always happy to have them. Then after the gifts were all opened and the papers were taken away, these people would all be sitting around having a happy time, and then we were going to light the trees. This is what comes. On Christmas Eve, our Christmas tree had decorations on it of tinsel mostly, and nativity scenes on cards that were framed in tinsel. The tinsel was very tarnished. It really was. To me, they were things of beauty because you only saw them once a year. We never did make popcorn or those chains or cranberries like some of the other people did, but we always had apples and oranges on the trees. On a few occasions, this elderly German lady I mentioned would make little cookies for us to hang and stars and bells and this sort of thing. Usually the lights were lighted four times during the Christmas season. We had little candles like birthday candles that were kind of spiral and different color, and they had little clamp things you'd clamp on the branches. You had to be very careful in putting them on so that you wouldn't have a branch above. Because they were lit, we would have maybe 40 candles on the tree. So now my maiden name was Wainer. So one year at the Wainer house, when the girls were old enough to help put up the tree, Louise reached up to light a candle, and the dress she was wearing caught fire. Ooh. She had lit one on the lower bough. Dad was helping us, and we were in the living room, and all of a sudden Louise had this pretty dress Mother had just made for her. It caught fire, and it was flaming, and Dad grabbed her, and he was just swatting her right and left, and I thought, what's he beating her for? He was smothering the flames, of course. So that's the way we celebrated Christmas Eve. The tree went into the corner again after we got the candles off and blown out. Mother would have a great big table laden with all kinds of goodies that we only had at Christmas. And that was great. And then Louise and I, and of course my little brother, we went to bed usually with our favorite gift in our hands. And that was that for the part of the Christmas deal, Christmas Eve. Well, Christmas Day was something else again. That was a very busy day for my mother. Mother would prepare the turkey for our dinner for Christmas Day. The turkeys were not oven ready like they are now. They had their necks wrung, I guess, and they all came in one frozen piece. So you not only had to thaw them out, but you had to dress them out too. Oh, dear. And mix your stuffing and put away and put that all away. So anyway, that was taken care of, and of course the pies were made the day before, and then another special evening was spent with friends. When my brother, Chuck Wainer, and a lot of Fairbanksons know him real well, he lives in Homer right now, when he was about 14, had a driver's license, he got the idea he was going to earn some Christmas money, so he took my dad's truck and went out and chopped down Christmas trees, and he sold them. He did that for about 3 or 4 years. And I remember the news miner had an ad in the paper one time when Chuck told them to put in something about Chuck Wainer and Christmas trees, which was just as common as ham and eggs. So he got some good-looking trees. He'd also travel over the Badger Slough, where the trees grew full and nicely shaped near the water's edge. All these pointed spruce were lined up in the Wainer's front yard, where Chuck's customers would come and take a pick. I think he sold them $1 a foot, but even at that, you could get a six-foot tree for $6. He would deliver the trees, of course, if the customer wanted, and he'd even make a tree stand on order. And he was good to his customers, knowing farewell that the money in town was tight and anyone with an axe could easily cut his own. One of the things I remember quite well was an old bachelor friend of ours when he lived in this little house over here. Things were so hard that year that this fellow, Jack Bailey, who was a good carpenter, he had the NC company deliver a case of canned milk and I think a sack of flour and a sack of sugar to the Wainer family for Christmas. Then he also gave certificates from Gordon's store for a pair of shoes for us. Now, of course, that was really nice, but things that we liked, we always got a doll, and some of them weren't so elegant. Quite often there was clothing, and there wasn't too awful many gifts for each of us. Well, it was a wonderful time, and I'm awfully glad that I was born in Christmas, in Fairbanks, yeah, with Christmas. The fact that we had such freedom here, we had all to behave and mind and do what our fathers and mothers told us, but it was a nice place to grow up, and I hated to see the changes that have come. I really do. Mm-hmm. Well, that was, I didn't know I was going to read that.
Yeah, I remember seeing that now.
Yeah.
It brings back, that this underlying theme that I've gotten from other people is that people didn't have much, but they appreciated what they had,
yeah.
And because of that, the holidays were really special.
Yes, they were. And many times the weather didn't give us the treat and have a nice warm Christmas. Sometimes it was so cold you couldn't go out and carol
very
yeah.
easily. Did people do that when the weather was mild? Christmas
well,
caroling?
They not when I was younger, but I seen this Christmas, this last Christmas, I was all. I had a long-distance phone call that I was talking on, sitting by the big window, and here came a kid up out of the driveway, and they were standing out there and starting to sing, and my golly, I was paying for the phone call, and I had to stop and open the door and say, I can't listen. But I couldn't tell. I mean, they didn't want to do that again. All right, now this is something that I am kind of fond of, and it's the office of the mayor of City of Fairbanks,
signed by Bill Wally.
Oh yes. Whereas Charlotte Wainer, daughter of Adolph and Barbara Wainer, was born and grew up in Fairbanks, married Robert Ames, has a son, Robert D. Ames. And whereas Charlotte Ames graduated from Fairbanks High School, studied piano under William Gorbrucht and Don Adler. Adler.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Has played piano for dances for 50 years, oh yes, more than that, donated many hours of piano playing for different organizations, high school dances, of playing for different organizations, I got here mixed up, high school dances, played at the Sourdough Hall, had given countless hours of playing for guests at Fairbanks Pioneer Home, was on the staff at Circle Springs Resort for four seasons, and during that time played the piano to entertainer and staff, also made beds. And that whereas on May 19th, 1931, she became a member of the Golden North Rebecca Lodge 4A, in 1950 became a member of Auxiliary No. 8, Pioneer of Alaska's, and a member of American Association of Retired Persons through the years, has been very active in all these organizations, whereas Charlotte Ames is known for picking gallons of blueberries and cranberries to give friends and relatives not able to pick their own. Now, therefore, I, Bill Wally, mayor of the city of Fairbanks, Alaska, do hereby proclaim Charlotte Ames as Fairbanks Senior Citizen of the Year and commend her for her outstanding public service and urge all citizens of this community to join me in expressing appreciation and extend best wishes for continued success in her endeavors concerning senior citizens throughout the year, and especially during Older American Alaskans Month, dated this 10th day of May, 1985, signed Bill Wally.
Very nice.
Well, I thought that was kind of nice. Well, I guess you got anything that's really important?
In that proclamation, he mentions Mayor Wally, your blueberry picking. Did you do a lot of that as a child, berry picking?
With my mom. Yes. I didn't dare spill my berries. You know, those were our fruits and
I guess
things.
That was a necessity to get you through the
winter.
Well,
it was a special change, you know. It was fun, and we'd take a picnic lunch and go out and pick the blueberries and raspberries and the cranberries. And I didn't care for the high bush cranberries so much, but I still tried to get out, and some of my friends bring me the cranberries, the low bush.
The low bush. Mm-hmm. Where would you pick? Just on the outskirts of town, or?
Well, they might chase you off of any place now because the place is filled up with so many people. But actually, almost any of the highways, you'll find a place where there's a low bush cranberries, and then the high bush cranberries are usually in another place.
But while you were a child, though, people didn't drive. I guess hardly anybody had cars in those days. So how would you get to your favorite blueberry patch?
Well, I know that Mrs. Moody, Bertha Moody, she had, before the horses came out, the cars that the people could afford, they went out with a horse and buggy and, you know, a little wagon and get the berries. But now you have to go pretty far because the people have taken up the land. And
right, they're all berry patches have subdivisions on them now.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, I got one of those books right in my here.
When you lived in this house, this picture of you and your older sister, did you have any area where you could garden? Because I imagine most people gardened.
Yes, indeed. We had, the gardens were planted every year.
Now, the picture I have in my hands is the front yard of your house. And it looks like your garden is in the front yard. So instead of having a lawn, people would have gardens in the front.
Well, this is very true, yeah. Because they can stay, you know, it's handy. But this is, I just think that's a very nice, neatly kept lawn, don't you?
So a profile of the house showing the three rooms.
Yeah.
And what I guessed was correct, a water tower that...
That's what it was. I don't even know how the water got up there.
Well, I guess you had a few rainstorms that could catch a bucket or two.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time you relied on Fred the waterman or somebody to deliver water.
Yeah, though my dad drove a well in our little place, and we had water there. You know, it wasn't just tasty maybe. Are we on or off?
Oh.
Lots of the thing that amazes me that I'm sitting across the street in my own comfortable home here, and Jane Glosson's house is just across there by that big...
This is on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
Between
and it's,
Field and...
And I sit here and I think back to me, you know, just being a little kid here, that's something strange. There was nothing on this block. I think there was one block, one little log cabin down in this corner, and then there was another little one up there. Gee, just a minute.
You picked blueberries close to town. There was risk of running into bears. Did you ever have any bears come into town?
No, I have never had any come into town. And I have been out in a berry patch when I've seen the back end of the bear going away. And so I'm scared of bears.
So you run in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Although, see, I was looking at this little clipping that you had 50 years ago, 1936, that there was a garbage dump on 2nd Avenue?
Yes, lower 2nd Avenue, when you go down to turn off on Lathrop Street.
Mm-hmm.
On 2nd.
And that was a gathering place for a black bear, too.
Yes, and all kinds of things, you know, just it was a mess. And they just leveled it all off and built houses on them. I mean, you know, it's okay. Well, 50 years ago, when the news miner, looking back with their column, it said July the 8th, 1936, bears are numerous at the garbage dump on Lower Second Avenue. A black bear weighing more than 400 pounds was shot there this morning by Adolf Wehner. That happens to be my father. Fairbanks sanitation engineer, but the past 2 days, Mr. Wehner has been charged by the bear. Today he came prepared with a heavy caliber rifle. Children are warned to keep away from the vicinity. This is a little excerpt from 50 years ago, so don't get scared.
That's not likely to happen now.
No.
You were saying earlier the dump was filled over.
Yes.
They don't have
the dump down there.
See, what buildings would be over that now? Alaska Land or Neptune?
No, water? Alaska Land was on pretty much virgin ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, so it was where the houses are. Yeah. One thing I wanted to ask you, I know during the Second World War, USO was a very popular place for the servicemen to come. Did you play the piano there?
Every Monday night, that was we had dances down there, and then the boys came in and we had a nice time.
So was there a band too, or were you
no? There was just Verda and me, and I think one time we had a drum. That's not a band.
A duet.
Yeah.
And you mentioned when we were talking off tape that you and your sister sang. Did you
duets? Yeah.
Duets. Did you?
We sang there too at funerals. Mm-hmm. I didn't like to sing at funerals, but I thought it was necessary, and I'm sure they enjoyed that—not enjoyed, but appreciated that we did.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if it was like somebody, a high school girl that was hurt in a car accident and died, and we sang for her. You can hardly turn somebody down, you know, when you. They want you to sing or do something like that, but we had a lot of fun. It was a great life, I'll tell you.
And you also sang at weddings?
I have only sung at a couple of my friends' weddings, and that was a solo, and so that was that. But I wouldn't want to have anybody ask me to sing now because I'm croaky.
So you've had your family, you mentioned of course, your sisters, that they have lived here in Fairbanks throughout their lives, too?
No. Lil Angerman, she was here most of the time because mm-hmm. It was in business here. But my oldest sister, as I say, she's out in Seattle in a rest home. She has... old age, I guess, because she's 90, 91 now,
mm-hmm.
and so, but we aren't in contact with her. She's not, she doesn't know what's going
but
on.
But she lived here.
Oh, yes, yes. They were born in Dawson, both the girls
mm-hmm.
were born in Dawson.
But she married someone locally?
Irene is still there, but she's very, very aged, you know,
mm-hmm.
91.
And she was the one that married...
Earl Borland, yeah, and they had two sons, but both those sons have died.
And Borland was the mechanic?
He was the mechanic that flew over to take those soldiers and off from that Nanuk. They were frozen up in the north, up in North Alaska. That's another story. That they had, they went in there to bring off these pelts and stuff that they were, furring for, getting furs.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was when they were going to make a trip in there to see, made the trip and the weather was too bad. I've got millions of pictures of them, you know.
This is Eielson.
And so
he was with Eielson when the plane crashed.
Yes.
He was 1929 or so.
It would be because I could really, if I had anything, put down in a regular order or something, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about 16 years old when that happened.
Mm-hmm. So you knew a lot of the early flyers then?
Oh, yes, almost all of them, yeah. Some of them even took us up for little airplane rides, but I don't like airplane travel.
Who did you fly with?
Oh, let's see. I went with Dorbant, I think his name was, and then there was a, I've probably forgotten half the names. I flew over to the Springs instead of taking the road over, you know.
Oh, the summer that you worked at the hot springs?
I worked there three seasons, either three or four.
Oh, so a bush pilot flew you there.
Well, yeah, and there was a man lost over there in that area. And he had been, I think it was Johnny Lawns, and he had flown the plane over there, and he was overdue. But I think that, I can't recall now at my 81 age, that it would be, whether they ever found him and it was a disaster, I don't remember that. And I would have known, you know, at mm-hmm. the time, but now I...
But there were a lot of fatal crashes in those early days.
Oh, yeah, quite a few.
The equipment just wasn't mm-hmm. as it is now. Mm-hmm. And conditions flying
That's
in Alaska
true.
Are pretty
yeah.
tough.
Well, so, I don't like air travel. I just don't like it. No.
You want to stay on the ground.
I get on the seat and I hang on to it.
Yeah, and yet your husband worked for Pan Am. Was he a
yes.
pilot?
Or no, he was a mechanic, but he's had 30, he had 43 and a half, I think, years in with Pan American mm-hmm. Airways. Yeah.
So you had an opportunity to fly Pan Am.
We could have gone free.
I was going to say, that comes with the job.
I know, and we could have done that, but I didn't want to fly. I want my foot on the ground. But my son, he goes out. He goes down to Costa Rica almost every winter to stay as a vacation down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's close to retirement from his job. And then he's going to go down there, I guess, and stay. I don't know.
Well, a lot of people fly out in the winter. Certainly is much different than it was when you were growing up, where people didn't even get out of town.
Well, I don't know. I just get sick thinking of what the world is coming to. You know, all these murders and all these, I think they're horrible things.
Yeah, it was pretty isolated, insulated life, I guess, in those days.
Yeah.
That you knew who was coming and going, and certainly in the winter, people couldn't get in or out very easily. So you got to know your neighbors fairly well, I would think.
Well, I have my little round of people that I'd have, you know, enjoy being with.
And I guess there are still a few from your childhood who are still here.
Oh, yes. There's a, well, golly.
Okay, look at your curling club, and that's probably...
Well, now let me see. Some of these girls aren't here. That's Dorothy Springrich. She died. I'm still half dead. And that's Alaska Link. And that, yeah, Linda Hassel, she's died. And but the gals that I knew quite well, there'd be Cora, the Rust family. You mm-hmm. probably heard of the Rust family.
Yes, they live not far from this neighborhood, I guess, just around a couple of blocks.
They used to.
This old house. Yes.
But now it's most of both of the boys are dead, and mm-hmm. The mother and father are gone, and. I have to take a...
I loved reading Clara Rust's book, This Old House.
Yes.
I suppose you knew that.
Oh, yes. I've got a copy.
Contemporary of her children. So
mm-hmm. Cora is Cora and June are alive. June Siders is June Rust. And she's been named the Carnival Queen, this big thing that's coming up next.
Oh, King and Queen Regents.
That's right. She's
Golden Days.
Yeah, and
I think I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. She's going to have. I was there when they announced it, and she's done a lot of work for that mm-hmm. that group too. So,
pioneers continue to keep busy.
I don't go because you see, I have a back that's not permitting me.
Yeah, a question I ask a lot of lifelong Alaskans like yourself, would you ever consider leaving, or is this what you consider home forever and ever?
I've got my plot up on the cemetery, and I'm going to be here till they take me up there. I know the town has changed and the people have changed, but there's just something to this place that I can't leave.
Sort of like Robert Service, the North just gets a hold of you and doesn't let you go.
Well, it isn't that the things that are like real for cold weather and things like that. Anybody would be a nut if they liked that. But this is my home, and it has been my home.
It sounds like you've had a wonderful time with your childhood and also your music.
I wish I could. Well, I have a tape recorder that I've taped some music on, and I haven't. Then my tape recorder, I think, is going on the fritz, so I can't play my tapes.
But these are tape recordings of your
music,
your piano playing.
Yeah, some with Verda and some at other places.
Yeah, you've given a lot of pleasure, I'm sure, to a lot of people. And
yeah, but I haven't. When I sit down there, and the other day, the one that just went off the reel, so I don't know what's wrong. But I enjoyed it, and I have a girlfriend I still write to, Verda Siebenthaler, and she plays the accordion. And we just had a lot of fun, the two of us playing at dances.
Yeah.
I think the largest band I ever played with was a nine-piece, mm-hmm. and that was down in Anchorage. Stay here until I'm no longer going to be. And I hope it doesn't get any worse with like the weather go bad or the town burn up or something.
Oh, well,
so we won't think those thoughts.
Yeah, I think Fairbanks is here to stay. It certainly has been an interesting place. I've been here for 27 years. And
you've been 27 years?
27 years.
My goodness.
I've certainly seen a lot of changes too, though not as many as you have, but it's mm-hmm. a pretty special place. And thank you very much for talking to me this evening. I've enjoyed meeting you.